From Springfield, this is State Week in Review, a program of analysis and commentary on the events that made news this past week in Illinois state government and politics.
Illinois is at a crossroads. Mike Madigan and the politicians he controls refuse to change.
Change in Springfield isn't easy, but you didn't send me here to do what's easy. With your help, I'm going to keep fighting to grow our economy and fix our broken state government.
Concerning the governor's TV ad, I would just say what I've said previously, that TV ad takes this to the extreme. It takes it away from moderation. It's just like the other non-budget issues.
So we want to cooperate with him. We should be doing that by meeting, trying to find common ground. Name calling is really more what you do when you're campaigning. We're not campaigning. The election's next year. His election was last year. This is the year we should be governing and reaching compromise.
Both sides need to just kind of bite their lip. I mean, my staff will tell you that there were many times when I was governor, and particularly that first few months, I had a lot of thoughts about Mike Madigan, but I never said them publicly.
Former Governor Jim Edgar urging cooler heads. Before that, Senate President John Cullerton, House Speaker Michael Madigan, all responding to a rare off-year TV ad launched by Governor Bruce Rauner. We'll talk about that and more this week on State Week. I'm Brian Mackey. Bill Wheelhouse is away. Our panel includes Charlie Wheeler, Director of the Public Affairs Reporting Program at the University of Illinois Springfield, Amanda Vinicky, State House Bureau Chief for WUIS and Illinois Public Radio, and Mike Riopel, Political Editor of the Daily Herald newspaper in Chicago's northwestern suburbs. Mike, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me, Brian.
So, Amanda, the TV ads, I'm going to start with you. The TV ads dropped this week, early this week. Were they as bad and mean as everyone expected? Give us a little sense of what they felt like.
Well, I think they sure aren't appreciated by the Democrats, even maybe if they weren't as vitriolic as had been expected. Some thought that the governor, and it wasn't, let me be clear, the governor's own campaign fund that was paying for this. This is something called the Turnaround PAC, and so far he is one of two donors to it. The smaller of the donors, he gave $250,000, but Sam Zell, another really wealthy Chicago businessman, has given $4 million to pay for ads like this. So
I kind of thought about, well, should I say it's not the governor's ad, it's really his ally's ad?
But it
I
is mean, his.
He
right.
was in it, so I kind of think that, you know, that qualifies
it's fair.
It as
yeah,
his ad.
It's his.
Yes. Yeah.
He knew what was going on. but it so he didn't come out against the speaker's law firm and his accusations that Rauner has made about the Speaker and Senate President Cullerton making money privately off of their public offices. He'd made that accusation once before, and it wasn't much appreciated either. In fact, Senate President John Cullerton wasn't in the ad at all. So some Republicans that I talked to, one even described the ad as fluffy, and basically said if he's willing to spend this much money to put out basically a ad that was just like those that we'd seen when he was a candidate for the governor's office, just wait. This is a warning, kind of a shot across the bow. Things will get worse. But I don't know if that's how Democrats see it. They say that this is something that's changing really the culture of Springfield. It's not just an ad. It's something that you have a guy who came in as governor and said, I'm the anti-politician. I just want to make things better. And instead, this is the year when you're furthest away from the next election. Typically, the first year of a General Assembly session is where you can get more of the hard stuff done, could pass a tax increase or cuts or, you know, whatever, kind of the tougher stuff. And instead, the governor is making this a round-the-clock campaign cycle, very Washington, D.C.-esque.
I was kind of surprised by the ads. You know, the thought was, okay, he's going to try and put pressure on legislators, especially who face tough elections next year. And the ad didn't look anything like some of the Americans for Prosperity ads that we saw this year and last year, where they would be on cable and they would be targeted to individual districts, like in the suburbs, for example. It would say, call State Senator Dan Katowski and Representative Michelle Mussman and tell them you want them to freeze property taxes. There was nothing like that. It was focused directly on the speaker, who is used to these kind of fights, and did not call out individual legislators that he might try and put pressure on. That's pretty easy to do nowadays with technology. You can replace names and pictures and ads pretty simply and get them into targeted web spots on Hulu or on cable. And there was nothing like that, no targeting at individual lawmakers who might might feel the pressure a little more than the leadership might.
So, Charlie, I want to turn to you. So, as Mike was pointing out, these did not target rank-and-file lawmakers. It targeted the speaker. Fewer than 1% of the voters in Illinois actually get to cast a ballot for or against Michael Madigan when they go to the polls. Is this an effective approach?
It hasn't been in the past. For the last several election cycles, the Republican, particularly the state organization, has attempted to make a lot of elections a referendum on Mike Madigan. He's the devil incarnate. He's the reason everything is bad in Springfield. He's been the dominant force. He's called the shots, since the time of the Great Flood. And in reality, it really hasn't taken hold. I mean, Governor Rauner won last November, but at the same time, Mike Madigan kept every one of the seats that he held before, even some that most people figured would flip and go to the Republicans. Madigan held on to them, and I'm not really sure it hasn't been effective in the past. Opinion polls show that Madigan is disliked. He's probably got the lowest favorable rating of any politician in the state. But as you point out, only a very small segment, 1/118th of the electorate, actually votes for Mike Madigan, and they like him quite well in his neighborhood. And so it's never been effective in the past. But on the other hand, you've never had people who are able to drop $1 million, $2 million, $4 million on something like this as kind of a whim, the same way that most of us would maybe go and get a Big Mac for lunch. Yeah, and you also have to wonder about the timing. We had a deluge of ads leading up to November. And in the Chicago market, right afterwards, we had another series of months of TV ads for the mayoral race. And I'm thinking a lot of people, when the ad comes on, they're just going to click the mute button or go and get a beer out of the fridge or something like that. They're not even going to pay any attention to them.
If in the middle of the summer people are even watching TV. Mike, yeah. You're trying to get in there.
But on the other hand, when you have all that money, and so what?
Yeah, Mike?
Yeah, another problem that might be out there in trying to get that message across is one Democrat pointed out to me. We're between elections, and people are used to Springfield being dysfunctional. They might be aware that maybe it's a little worse than previous budget gridlocks, but how long have we been talking about the budget being bad, more than a decade? How long have we been talking about, these various same issues in Springfield? That might be tough to put pressure on legislators because general voters are, not keenly, they know it's a problem. They know there's a problem in Springfield, but does your average voter know specifically what's happening now, when the deadline is, who needs to be pressuring whom, et cetera?
Well, and I think that's where there's the questions that some have had are, is Bruce Rauner pushing for things to get really bad, for there to be some sort of government shutdown, for there to be just mass disarray by no budget getting resolved by the end of the month in the time a new fiscal year begins? He said that crisis creates opportunity. And so might that be something that changes the dynamic when voters and residents maybe tune out after a decade of issues and things seem to generally be okay? Would it be something that would move the mark? And then the question would be, is it also something that Democrats are pushing for, Democratic leadership at least? They would say no. know, of course, when asked, but would they say, okay, he wants a calamity, give him that, and guess who will wear the jacket for it? Rauner will perhaps try and use his paid media, these advertisements, to put the blame, and this is kind of the early beginnings of it, on Democrats. They're the cause of dysfunction, and I'm the one who's here to try and, quote, shake it up, or Democrats maybe having the mindset that, all right, when things really do get bad and people start to notice their government services aren't there, and they will blame the governor. He's the guy in charge. He'll wear the jacket. Doesn't matter what the ads are.
So, Charlie, we heard Senate President Cullerton at the top of the show say that, you know, this is the year for governing. The governor ran last year. We're not up for next year. Do you get the sense, though, that the governor is thinking ahead to the 2016 elections with these ads, perhaps? And does he even have a chance? I mean, there's supermajorities in the Senate, supermajority in the House, at least on paper. That includes a lot of, you know, perhaps fiscally conservative Democrats who might not go along with a liberal agenda. But, I mean, does the governor have a shot at really upending the legislative balance of power next year?
I don't think there's much of a chance of suddenly the 2016 elections yielding Republican majorities in the Senate or the House. I think some seats could shift. There are really not that many seats that are in play. When the map was drawn by the Democrats, it was gerrymandered to create solid Democratic districts. But one of the ways you do that is you pack Republicans into a smaller number of solid Republican districts. So there are very few districts that are what you might call swing. And in some of the districts that are swing, the Democrats have a voting pattern that reflects their constituency. And so my experience over the years watching this stuff has always been that lawmakers who are attuned to their district and receptive to the concerns of their people and have a voting record like that generally have a decent chance of getting reelected, even when it's a tight contest. And I think also because it'll be a presidential year, the Democratic turnout is going to be higher than it normally is than it would be in a non-presidential year. That's just historically, that's been the pattern. The Republicans tend to turn out in similar numbers for each election. Democrats spike in a presidential year. And if Hillary Clinton is the Democratic candidate for president here in Illinois, that should further boost Democratic turnout, I would think. So it would be an uphill climb.
So you add all that to the fact that these Democrats in swing districts, getting back to the Republican ads targeting Speaker Madigan, will run against Speaker Madigan with ads paid for by Speaker Madigan. They'll have mailers out there that says, I will stand up to my leadership. You know, I will run against Speaker Madigan. I'll vote independently. And they're paid for by the Democratic Party, which is headed by Speaker Madigan. So the speaker gets that. The Democrats in swing districts get that. And you'll see them run against the speaker. Even
and they've taken votes set
caucus.
Up by the speaker that will enable them to do that.
Right.
These votes that are being taken now, Republicans say it's to make us look bad. And there have already been some mailers kind of with that, Republicans voting against tax increases. But it's also for the benefit of Democrats in these swing districts. So then they'll have mailers that also say, see, look, I voted against the speaker for his plan.
Or I voted to freeze property taxes.
Right?
You know, all the Democrats who voted to freeze property taxes, which is, of course, a very popular thing in the suburbs, are all from the suburbs. You know, that's a popular thing to do.
Right. While the governor is saying they're not going for a property tax increase, they'll say, hey, look, here's proof. I did.
Mm-hmm. And it occurred to me, and I've said this before, that it would have been, from my perspective, a better strategy for the administration, for the Rauner folks, to have told some of those Republican lawmakers, go ahead and vote for this stuff. Even though Madigan is putting it up, we think it's a sham, we think he's trying to show this to embarrass us, go ahead and vote for it because it's good for you and your district. I'm not going to demand some kind of blind allegiance that you all have to go in lockstep and go over the cliff on these issues. Vote your district. I understand. What would you say? I'm adult enough that I can take this apparent rebuff, knowing that in the greater scheme of things, it's for the best.
So, Amanda, I want to ask you, the speaker held a news conference this week. The House and Senate were both back in Springfield again for a one-day session, part of this continuous session. We heard Governor Edgar at the top of the show say both sides need to kind of bite their lip a little bit. The speaker did compare Governor Rauner to former Governor Rod Blagojevich, but other than that, has he been sort of trying to engage in a tit-for-tat with the governor? What has been the speaker's approach through this?
I would say actually no. He is trying at the very least to come off, I think, as the adult. Even his remarks about Blagojevich, and I was there, I asked the question, he were more nuanced than is often quoted. He did make the comparison, but he also said it's clear that the governor doesn't want to be like that, and he's made moves so that he won't be. He's not calling us into a continual summer session, for example. So there was more nuance there in his press conference this week, even in relation, as we heard at the top of the program, he didn't come out incredibly combative. He uses words like moderation. This nobody should operate in the extreme in order to reach a deal. Those are, it's literally like you could, you know, press a repeat and get the same couple of answers out of the speaker on many of these questions. He is, I think, making a very calculated decision to not at this point in time come out against Bruce Rauner himself as a personality. He doesn't like the plans, but he has been restrained in his remarks about Rauner, to say the least.
And you, what about Senate President Cullerton? You had a chance to sit down with him for an interview this week as well.
I think also somewhat restrained, a little bit more out there. Again, as we heard, he said this isn't the time for campaigning. And it's clear, I think, when you listen to John Cullerton, he said, you know, sometimes you campaign for things and it's easy. He has clearly been bothered by Rauner's lack of knowledge about how Springfield works and that there's a newcomer who can sweep in, who's calling for term limits and such when he doesn't even know how things work. He hadn't really had a lot of experience with Springfield. And it's clear that Cullerton is, I think, just annoyed by that and says, hey, the governor's had a lot to learn. He's learned, but he can see that this is more complicated. And he says things like workers' compensation, it may be new to the governor, but it isn't new to us. We've dealt with that. So thrown a lob here or two, but here and there. But he, at the same time, is also one, he didn't get engaged in any name calling and says, hey, we need to work together. And also went on to say he's optimistic and hopeful about a budget resolution and a deal.
Coming up, the governor has announced a new round of budget cuts for the next fiscal year. This is State Week.
Support for State Week in Review comes from Illinois Issues Magazine, deciphering Springfield legislation and the state of the state. More information at WUIS.org.
Our panel on State Week, Charlie Wheeler, Amanda Vinicky, and the Daily Herald's Mike Riopel. I'm Brian Mackey. So as we tape this midday Friday, we've seen on the past, we don't have anything yet, but on the past few Fridays, the governor has made some announcements about budget cuts. Last week, Amanda, can you take us through some of the things he is saying these are management steps to prepare for the Madigan-Cullerton budget, as the governor puts it. Can you talk a little bit about what the latest rounds, as we go to air, I said, this is about a week ago that he announced this cut.
Right. So as you noted, Brian, we don't actually have a budget. General Assembly has passed one. They're just now getting it to the governor for him to act on. Presumably the governor's office is figuring out what it's going to do. Outright veto, a mandatory veto, just kind of make some reductions in the spending, or what exactly he'll do with the budget. He says in preparation, though, for it being out of balance, he's doing everything from cutting a massive cut to Amtrak trains of about 40%. There will be no money for the county fairs and such which there's also previously no longer funding the tobacco quitline. That's something that during the uproar over the current fiscal year budget, he had suddenly nixed. Then it got money back and a deal that had been worked out. But yet again, the tobacco quitline will evidently need to go under. That's something that helps people with smoking cessation. So that's just a couple of these programs. And of course, there's immediate backlash from Democrats and from the many advocates who say that these are important.
And Mike, and I should say you've been following a local youth detention center in your area, right? I mean,
yeah, there are two in the suburbs that we pay attention to, and he said he wants to close at least one and up to two youth prisons across the state, and it raises some questions. There are prison watchdogs who actually think that's a pretty good idea. It raises some questions though about how quickly he can see savings, budget savings from it. We're coming up pretty quick here, July 1st, on when the state's not going to have a budget. It takes time to close a prison. He hasn't even named which one he wants to close at this point. And even if he did, there would be hearings and all that kind of thing before there would be any kind of money savings from it. So from all of these cuts, I think there's some question, does it immediately save the state money? Or is it just and this might make sense for him to do, is it just a way to try to pressure people into coming to some kind of deal?
Or I will also add, the administration really hasn't responded to questions about, okay, what if there is a deal? Since it does take a long time to close these facilities, there's a state law that, you know, sets up procedures, you've got to have hearings, so really it can be months. Will it be something that he'll proceed with? Regardless, is this a pressure point? Or maybe had he wanted, for example, to close the state museum all along? Once you begin to do those closures and, you know, lay off the people, give up a collection, what have you, you can't really reverse it. So is this short-term threat something that will be carried out even when perhaps a revenue solution is reached?
Right, because if there isn't a budget, it's unclear how you'd save money doing these things, because if you don't have the authority to spend money after July 1st, it's not like if you shut down a museum, it frees up money to send to a nonprofit that takes care of disabled people. You don't have the authority to send that money either. So I think there's some procedural, technical questions even about what this accomplishes.
And I think that's a very good point, because as you mentioned earlier, there is a procedure that you have to follow if you want to close a facility. And the bottom line is the absolute quickest that you can close one would be 2 months. That's assuming that you follow the law. Now, maybe the governor's intent is to ignore the law, go ahead and order these shutdowns and dare someone to sue him and get a court to say, no, you have to follow the law. And not to cast aspersions, but that was one of the things that got Rod Blagojevich in trouble with the legislature when he tried to do things unilaterally despite what was laid out in the statutes. And the same thing with some of these savings. For example, in the Medicaid program, you could say, okay, we're going to reduce the appropriation for Medicaid by $2 billion. Unless you actually change the rules of the program that say if you're under this income level and you have this condition, by law and by rule, you are entitled to be treated for it and have Medicaid pay for it. And unless you change the underlying rules and in some cases the actual law, people will be entitled to those services, and the state will be on the hook to pay for them whether or not the money is appropriated. So it's not just a matter of just cutting out the money. You also have to make substantive changes. And as you guys downtown know, every year there are several bills that are not appropriation bills per se, that don't authorize the expenditure of money. Rather, they're called budget implementation bills, and they are proposals that change the existing statutory language, that rewrite portions of the law so that the actual statute conforms to the spending intentions of the legislature as laid out in the budget that they send to the governor in, you know, dozens of bills.
So, I mean, are these sort of fake savings right now? I mean, if the governor's not going to have authority to spend anyway on the new budget year, you know, what real world effect do these have? Or are we sort of just playing into the PR hand that he's trying to set up by talking about him, and now he looks like a fiscal conservative and so forth?
Well, I think what he's signaling is that this is the lengths to which I am willing to go to get my way. And from my perspective, it's all about busting the unions. And if I don't get my way, I'm willing to close down the state museum. Heck with it. I'm willing to cut all these programs that provide services to people who need them desperately. And it's no skin off my nose. It's that kind of attitude. And it's unlike in past situations with past governors, going back, and again, I date myself, going back to the days of Richard Ogilvie, there was always the recognition and the understanding that there are certain things that we both know, we being, in most cases, a Republican governor and a Democratic General Assembly, we both know there are boundaries beyond which we won't go. And we will reach a solution before it comes to that. And now with a new administration, it's not clear in my mind whether there are boundaries or whether the governor is willing to go beyond what any other governor has been willing to do in terms of inflicting pain on the people.
So, Amanda, just about a minute before we get to notes from the field, but I wanted to ask you if you can set up a more continuous session next week.
Yeah, the House and Senate will both be back on Tuesday. As yet, we haven't heard what the topic or the agenda will be. This past week, they dealt with college affordability, or lack thereof, I suppose, in the Illinois Senate. And they talked about DCEO privatization, something else that the governor has put on his plate. And the speaker said, you know, we're willing to work with him on this. But he walked away from compromises. Again, of course, Rauner, I think, puts it differently and said that the speaker pulled some last-minute shenanigans on that one, but we'll continue to have the legislature back. Really, I think it's a matter of members wanting to look like they're not the ones holding up a budget compromise, so they're continuing to be a presence in the Capitol.
Well, and it occurs to me also it's an opportunity for lawmakers to be here, for the speaker and the Senate president to be here, accessible to the Springfield press corps, so that at the end of the session, they're able to put their spin forward and counter whatever propaganda is coming out of the governor's office.
So only about a minute and a half for notes from the field. Mike Riopel, I'm going to start with you.
Well, there was one show of bipartisanship this week, at least. The mayor of Chicago, Rahm Emanuel, and Governor Bruce Rauner shared the stage at the Blackhawks Stanley Cup victory rally. Maybe bold for two politicians to face tens of thousands of potentially drunken hockey fans, but at least there was some good news for both of them for that.
Charlie Wheeler.
Well, the Illinois Supreme Court struck a blow for civility on the internet in a ruling this week where they said that an internet service provider, Comcast, has to divulge the name of a anonymous commenter who made potentially libelous charges in a post on the website of the Freeport newspaper. And as an aside, I always have found it incredible that newspapers would open up their comment section to people to post anonymous stuff that is just totally outlandish. I think it detracts from the credibility of the paper itself.
And Amanda Vinicky.
Well, Auditor General Bill Holland has been in that post for some 23 years, but midway through his third decade in the job as an independent investigator, he says he's stepping down at the end of this year. I'll add another quick Springfield shout out. Springfield's own Andre Iguodala was the MVP Golden State champs for the NBA. So a little more sports talk here on State Week.
And I wanted to note that apparently the state of Illinois is having trouble finding a bank or some sort of financial company to process the large amounts of cash it's expecting to get for tax revenue from the medical marijuana program. Apparently, there were no responses to a solicitation last fall. State Treasurer Michael Frerich says he's going to be investigating why that is. That's our time for this edition of State Week. Thanks to our guest, Mike Riopel of the Daily Herald. You can get a podcast of this show at WUIS.org. Production assistance for today's program was provided by Bob Meyer. For Charlie Wheeler, Amanda Vinicky, and Mike Riopel, I'm Brian Mackey.
You've been listening to State Week in Review, a program of commentary and analysis of events in Illinois state politics and government. State Week in Review is produced in the state capital by public radio station WUIS. This is IPR, Illinois Public Radio.